On March the 28th, I was part of what Tortoise Media call a think-in, which is one of their regular events, which is a great discussion event where they invite a few people like me, but also have a really engaged audience who are part of their membership. When I was first invited, the question was about what should happen post-May, whether there was going to be a post-May, should she resign? By the time I got there, she had offered to resign, sort of. And what you're about to hear was the discussion that followed. Tortoise Media is a membership organisation, very interesting sort of slow news approach. If you enjoy the discussion, you might want to consider joining them. And I can give you a special code that will get you some money off doing so. The friend code is Ellie, E-L-L-I-E, 5-0, sorry, E-L-L-I-E, 5-0. And I believe that gives you a great discount on membership. So do consider it and enjoy the discussion. Thank you.
The matter at hand is very much who should succeed Theresa May. So without using the phrase ton of bricks, I shall try and steer the conversation away from long debates about the merits of Remain and Leave. This is a put you on the spot evening in the sense that we've now reached, I think, a moment where we have to ask the question who. But it seems to me that there is an interrelationship between the other sort of questions that orbit around that, the what and the why and the how, which is if this party that has gone through such colossal fragmentation, disaggregation in the last few years is to have a viable future, it needs to think of questions beyond Brexit and about its future role. So when you contribute, please identify yourselves and then identify who you think is the right candidate. And then give us a sense of what the reasons are that that person is the right person, not only for the party, but if you are minded to the country, which would be nice. So I'm, because the country is always a nice thing to look after, although it seems to have been somewhat neglected in recent weeks. So I'm going to kick off by going to Tim Bale and asking him a little bit, where is he? There he is. Tim is a professor at Queen Mary University of London and a very distinguished expert on the Conservative Party and has done a lot of work on the membership. And as we know, it's the members who get to decide. The structure of the leadership contests are such that the parliamentary party chooses a final pair. And I guess, Tim, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on what might happen if there is a leadership contest in the next few months, which seems likely.
Okay, well, we actually surveyed the members of the Conservative Party a few months ago on the leadership, and one of the things that we found was that it was a very, very open question. There wasn't really one candidate who had a kind of runaway lead. It's important to say that when we asked the Conservative Party membership, and it was well over 1,000 of them, we didn't actually give them a list of people from whom to choose. So we actually asked for write-ins. So to some extent, I guess, the fact that I think Boris Johnson was in the lead, but only with about 22 or 23% from memory, is partly an artifact of the way that we did it. But of course, you could criticise kind of traditional polling, though this is not intended as a criticism of Ben there, for in some ways kind of anticipating or closing down the field by providing a list of people. So in some ways the thing that really came out of that survey was quite how open the field is, actually. And I suggest that the fact that Boris Johnson, was in the lead, and Jacob Rees-Mogg was a little bit further behind, but not that much further behind from memory, really has to do with name recognition and celebrity as much as it does with, Leave or, particular kind of platforms that those people would represent. So my feeling is that it's still probably the case that this is anyone's to win, and that actually a contest would matter. In other words, I think it is the case that once we get into people actually declaring, once we get into that battle, it is possible that someone that we haven't actually thought of, someone whose name we might not even mention tonight, although I think that's unlikely given how many people are here and how interested they are.
Well, amazes. Go on.
Yeah, could come through. So, I mean, there are so-called sort of dark horses from underneath, as it were, the present cabinet. And, you know, Tom Tugendhat, for example, is often suggested there. But I suspect that that's because he is the kind of Liberal Tories' wet dream, in a way, rather than necessarily because he has as much of a chance as either he or some columnist perhaps would like. I mean, I think the key really is, and that you know, many people no doubt will have said this or you will have already thought this, is who the MPs will allow through into the final two. And I have very little doubt, I would say, even given what I've said, that if Boris Johnson makes it through to the final two, that he will be very, very difficult to stop. You know, we can say to ourselves, you know, he's got these skeletons in the cupboard, although they're not really in the cupboard, actually, as far as I'm concerned. We can say that he's flip-flopped all over the place. You know, we can say that he desperately tries to be all things to all men. We can make all sorts of criticisms. But as we know from Donald Trump's winning of the nomination, and we know of Donald Trump's winning of the presidency, I'm not sure these days that they are barriers in the way that they previously would have been. I'm not so sure, having said all that, about the openness of the field and the contest making a difference, how much people's platforms will actually...
Well, let's move on to that. So, yeah. Emma Bunnell, you're a very familiar writer and broadcaster from all sorts of places. Well, you are, but and you've done three podcasts already today, I gather. So, right, this is your third, right. Okay, so here's a question is, I mean, again, to reframe it, who should, to pick up Tim's point, who should be the next Tory leader?
I mean, I think that really depends on who you are when you're answering that question. So I'm a member of the Labour Party, so I want the most disastrous possible.
Right. Well, there are plenty of options.
British citizen, so I'm not sure I do want the most disastrous possible option.
What
I want is someone who will basically keep the country together long enough to let Labour win an election against them. But I don't know that there is an option like that the Tories will choose. I think this is the problem that we've got at the moment in all politics. We are choosing leaders who satisfy their smaller bases. That don't necessarily have the reach into the country. Now, we don't, and so that's polarising the country even further. We're always being asked to pick one of two sides, and the two sides are moving further apart. Whether the country itself is moving further apart or not, we are being forced to choose those sides. So I think the Tories are going to go to their end. And I think the Tory MPs are going to try and stop that, but I'm not sure they will. And if they do let Boris into the last two, he is their id. The posh bonker who wants a hard Brexit. I mean, that is the Tory id.
That's a technical term, is it? Sam Lowe, you're a senior research fellow at the Centre for European Reform. You too have been busy on the treadmill of commentary, I know. I mean, look, from the European perspective, and also, I guess, from the patriotic perspective, who should it be? I mean, is there a way of keeping the Tory party from its id, or is it the case that, in fact, the endless attempt by Tory leaders to keep the party in balance has now become futile, and it has to be a Brexiteer, and if so, who?
If you approach the question in terms of who should it be, as you think about the future, what future we're going into, so assuming the withdrawal agreement passes at some point, I know, big assumption, the next phase, if not any more, people say this is the easy bit, the next phase is pretty difficult. So the next phase is going to be just as difficult, if not harder. And they're still going to have to cope with the compromises that Theresa May has attempted to navigate, but ultimately, we'll see, has maybe failed to do so. And that is, do we want to maintain our economic relationship with the EU and prioritise it over one with the US? Do we want a whole UK exit, or are we okay with Northern Ireland being treated separately? All of these questions are going to replay. So who should it be? Is someone sensible? Is someone like David Lidington? Somebody who understands Europe, who understands compromise? Who shouldn't it be? I think we had a very good list made of them last night, which was the 160 people who voted for no deal. That's an excellent list of people who should not be allowed in any ministerial position ever, and should certainly not be allowed to be Prime Minister. So it will probably be one of them.
Right. But who in particular would you... I mean, if you had to punt, who will it be?
Well, so it's difficult to work out at the moment who are the ones who are being cynical and who are being stupid. So I would probably go for cynicism over stupidity. So I would worry it would be you'd end up with someone like Boris Johnson or maybe Dominic Raab.
Right. So we've got a kind of fairly apocalyptic image of where the Tory id is ends up with Boris Johnson or Dominic Raab. Now, A, is there anyone who wants to agree or take issue with that? Chris.
So I work here. I think there's a sort of sequencing problem with what we've said so far, which is so the Conservative Party is currently in government with a slight shortfall in Parliament. If it loses many more MPs, it will no longer be in government. How does it get to the end of a leadership election where it's clear, for say it's sake, become, say, Boris and... And one of the sort of, let's say, Jeremy Hunt or it's one of these sort of people who pretended they really, really, really sad they voted Remain and are pretending they wish they voted the other way. Strange people in politics. But it's probably one of those two. How do you get through even like the hustings process without the party fracturing? Because when it becomes clear it's going one way, like, is Amber Rudd, do we think, seriously going to stay in the cabinet? In the Conservative Party, when it becomes clear it's going to be sort of Boris Johnson walking away with it, at what point does the fact that the government, does the government move from being a minority government to just a minority?
Yes.
And we're really talking in some senses about who's going to be the leader of the residual Conservative Party rather than a Conservative government.
So, yes, and say who you are, please.
My name is Mark McGuthy. I work in public affairs and financial services. I think it's a question for the Conservative Party of what is the Conservative Party now? Because you talk a lot about Boris, but the most curious thing about Boris now, if you think about it in the relation to what the Conservative Party is and has been, is that Boris made the now seminal remark, F business. Now, if the Conservative Party is no longer a party of business and it's now a party of right-wing nationalism, that's a fairly dramatic turn. So... the question of like who should be leader of the Conservative Party, I think, depends upon what the Conservative Party now wants to be.
Well, implicit in what you're saying is that you think it should still be pro-business, so who would you like?
Oh, well, I'm a member of the Labour Party again, so it's
again, assuming that...
But then the question is, how can you remain as a party of pro-business if you're based? But it's really true that Tory associations up and down the country are full of people who are clamouring to deselect Dominic Grieve and Nick Bowles and yeah. Any Romanian MP in the country. It would be as if Labour are trying to carry on being New Labour with full of momentum members. It has to be whatever it is. So, if you want to say, oh, who would be that person? Amber Rudd would probably be that person. But is the membership really going to vote for Amber Rudd? No. So in a sense, maybe what the Conservative Party needs to do is actually reach its id, and
Ben Page, Chief Executive of Ipsos Mori, the man with the polls. Tell us what we need to know.
Well, the first thing is polls don't tell you much about this situation because the person who wins is rarely the one who's ahead, although in this instance it was always a first time for everything. Boris Johnson is incredibly polarising, even among Conservative supporters. But obviously we're not talking about people who might vote Conservative compared to what. We are talking about the 120,000 or so people in the party. The issue to me isn't this short-term thing, which is all very exciting. It's actually who is going to be able to... If you're the Conservative Party, you need to get a majority in the House of Commons. To do that, you need to get people who voted Labour last time to vote for you, given that 92, 94% of the electorate voted for one of the two parties. So the question is who... out of the runners and riders might on earth be in a position to eventually do that at some distant point. And on that, I have absolutely no idea. There's so much cunning, guile, and everything else going on, because they all have the skin of a rhinoceros and the sort of, the sensitivity of an ox. They all march with the Prime Minister's baton in their back pocket. I have absolutely no idea.
Right, so on that knowledge-charged bombshell, would anyone else like to come in with a... Yes, and say who you are, please.
My name's Tom. Playing a bit of a devil's advocate, does it matter? So, kind of your bog standard Tory voter, my dad, for example, he will vote Conservative, kind of no matter what, I kind of think, that because he won't vote Labour.
It's at the margin. So in British politics, I was expecting Corbyn to break this in 2017, but it turned out to be true. I can make this the leader of the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. It will get 25-30% of the vote, guaranteed. So we've only then got another 20-30% to go for. And so, yes, that is baked in, but this is where we get back to at the margins. I know it's very boring to be a centrist dad and say you need to go to the middle, but there is still some of that if you want to govern this country.
Is there a middle that isn't caught in politics that... Jeremy Hunt on the NHS, you've got Amber Rudd as Home Secretary and the scandal there. You've got so many different cabinet ministers or kind of top runners that I feel like
I mean, given your... I totally take the point about your scepticism about, who it is, but given that it has to be someone, who would you opt for?
Well, like the others, again, Labour members, so I guess Boris Johnson.
So the worse it is, the better it is. But no. But let's pose it differently. If the person has you know as a thought experiment, this person will be Prime Minister, which is likely given the sequencing we're looking at. You presumably want someone who is going to do more than just deliver a Labour landslide. You want, or maybe you do. I don't know. But let's assume that as a thought experiment, it's going to be a while. Who should it be?
Honestly, I don't know.
Do you think that Jacob Rees-Mogg or Boris Johnson would...
Can you say your name, please?
Sorry, Adam. Do you think that Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson have a no chance to win an election?
I don't think anyone's got no chance, and I think anyone who makes predictions at the moment is bonkers.
You said Jacob Rees-Mogg, as a Labour voter, you'd like Jacob Rees-Mogg.
I think he's definitely, if we're talking about that middle ground that Ben is looking at, I don't think Jacob Rees-Mogg appeals to them particularly. Mm. I think he appeals much more to the people who are already staunchly Tory. I don't think he's good at talking to Middle England. I don't think he's good at talking to people who are concerned about the state of public services at the moment. I don't think he's good at talking to people who are worried about cuts to schools, cuts to the NHS. I think that is a growing constituency as austerity has lasted longer.
Adam, I just want to flip your question see if I can get you to make it into a statement, because I'm guessing that you might think that there is a way that either of those...
As we said, we can't rule out anyone. We've had Donald Trump elected in the US. We've had Brexit here. I come from Cornwall, and we live in a London bubble here. We're all intelligent people, and we wouldn't vote for... Well, I'm going to make a very big generalisation.
Well, hold on. Boris Johnson was twice elected London Mayor. So Boris Johnson was twice elected London Mayor.
Exactly. And so I know people that... It's Turkey's vote for Christmas. They would vote for him because he's funny, and he is... There's so much racism and bigotry that people would vote for him. The Tory member, he would walk an election if he got down to the last two of the Tories. And I think he'd beat Corbyn in an election to be Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Christina Patterson, you're a very distinguished journalist. What do you think?
Clearly you've got a tactic of flattering people into silence. I think, as with almost everything political at the moment, we're talking about the least worst... We're grappling towards the least worst option, the art of the possible, balancing one nightmare carnival parade grotesque against another nightmare carnival parade grotesque. Of course, as with Labour Party at the moment, the party members will only vote for the carnival parade grotesque. So, we have to obviously take that into account. Taking that into account, I would say damage limitation in terms of instant name recognition and clear Brexit credentials, I would say Michael Gove, because he's, I was going to say sensible, but A, he's behaved like a nutcase on occasion, and B, we all thought Theresa May was sensible 2.5 years ago. So, hey, you can get some big shocks. But everybody knows he can behave like a nutcase, but he seems to have calmed down a little bit. He has done, I think he's bright. He understands the complexity of the issues, I think that, or at least some of the issues. I think that he had a big shock in environment because suddenly these people who've been flouncing around saying let's revive World War II and you know let's sort of have rationing suddenly met people who had voted to leave and realised that their livelihood was going to be completely destroyed by the decision they made. So I think that's given him a bit of a dose of reality. And I think in terms of negotiating the incredible complexities of what lies ahead, which we hope won't be no deal, which may or may not be a version of Theresa May's deal passing, or even if it's customs union, it's going to be a nightmare. And I think, I mean, I would, yes, I would love David Livingstone, but that's not going to happen. So I think from that point of view, someone like Michael Gove could be a least worse option. But I think really what both parties need is somebody who isn't tainted by this whole business. So ideally, they'd skip a generation and they'd go for someone who is not known, didn't make their reputation by flouncing around with Steve Baker and saying, you know what, we want the most radical, cleanest, hardest, most disruptive Brexit we can get, but somebody who isn't very strongly associated with the whole thing, and almost a tabula rasa, a blank slate that people can project their fantasies onto to create and build something slightly different.
Georgina.
So it strikes me in this conversation, we've gone either for someone we think voters one voters would like, and then we touched upon what would make a good prime minister and a good leader at this time when the country is in a crisis. I think it's really important when we're thinking about who could play that role to think what skills that person would need. So what would you need? Do you need a vision to know where you're going so that when the going gets tough, you still know where you're heading? You need to surround yourself by a team who want to work with you, but also who won't be afraid to challenge you. And you also need to be able to delegate responsibility, because ultimately this is so complicated that you cannot be the one to decide everything. So who do we think then would be able to do that? And do we think that whoever would replace Theresa May has the appetite to do that?
And who do you think?
I don't know, I'm still pondering.
Dolly Tice, you are a very active activist, big tent. And very much involved in equal representation in Parliament. So, assuming Theresa May goes quite soon, who do you think it should be?
Well, it was a linking on
a point. Nice segue.
Yes, because I would approach the question in exactly the same way, and I can't help but think of the key skills and qualities a leader needs, regardless of whether it's dealing with Brexit or kind of day-to-day business. And vision, absolutely, I would put that at the top. But ideological integrity, I just think, is so important. And it links to what you were saying of what is the Conservative Party these days. And being a Conservative Party member and activist, I spend pretty much every day trying to answer that question for myself, and I know the answer of what it is for myself, and recognise that there is and has always been plurality in the party on this, and we know that throughout history, the longest standing party in many ways for those reasons of its flexibility and adaptability. But the other thing was also internal authenticity and proof that they do it, because everything you just said, I kept thinking Theresa May's Burning Injustices speech didn't follow through, team didn't stick with her, and now what do we see around her? Somewhat sort of a nameless, faceless number 10. And I find that that is a question that's so important, and I can't help but say, I want to say with 50-50 Parliament hat on, women come to mind at the very top, but actually people like Matt Hancock, who has a clear agenda. Everyone knows he's passionate about tech. He's absolutely pushed that through. He's owned prevention within health, which I cannot tell you, I'm in epidemiology and public health, so it is just absolute music to have someone who comes to a brief, not necessarily with any background, and yet owning the one component that we have been calling for decades. Not quite there yet with the vision, but he is so open to the ideological arguments as well as what the evidence base is telling him that that, for me, is exactly what a leader should have. So I would put him very much at the top. I was very disappointed with Dominic Raab. I thought with his background in negotiations, he would be spectacular in that position and didn't turn out to have the other skills required. But for the women, I also wanted to put forward the idea of Penny Mordaunt, because she is someone also who has that internal authenticity. She's got a clear ideology to herself, and she is so rolls up her sleeves, down with the people, incredibly passionate about the issues that she cares about. And I think that comes across. I'm sort of disappointed it's not more public, or she is not more publicly discussed as a potential leader.
So it's interesting that we've finally sort of moved away from the kind of Voldemortian gravitational pull of Boris and opened up. And we've had a Gove raised to a Hancock and a Mordaunt. Anyone prepared to go higher? Do I have a...
I've got a left field candidate for you.
Go on.
It won't be him, but it might. He's an interesting thought as to the future of the Conservative Party. It's Robert Halfen.
Robert Halfen.
I think Robert Halfen is where the Tory Party could really make interesting roads into Labour territory. You know, some of the stuff that he cares about, his whole working class Toryism, Tory unionism, absolutely fascinating.
Fuel duty and all, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm on it. So it's only those two things. There's putting someone who can deliver the leadership, whatever Brexit turns out to be, and someone who is electable in whenever the next election is. We kind of all read half decent papers here and can make, you know, arguments about what different people believe in and, you know, what they stand for. How much of it's down to that, and how much is it actually down to just being a good sort of PR person and being able to have that kind of celebrity factor? We've seen with Trump how that was a factor, and we've also seen with Ed Miliband how a bacon sandwich was kind of a large part of the downfall of his campaign. So I wonder how much is actually do people care about, and when people, I mean the nation rather than this room, care about what people stand for and whether they're into tech, whether they're into sort of quite, you know, specific issues versus how good they are in front of camera.
So that's kind of who will, but who should it be? Who would you like to see?
I can only name not rather than... I can name probably people I wouldn't want it to be rather than who I would. So, again, I'm kind of torn.
Okay, torn. Any advance on torn? Yes.
My name's Chris. I've been a journalist in Germany for the last six years.
Excellent.
I have a different kind of perspective. But I guess the question, I know this is probably very unlikely, but I would say, let's say from the European Union standpoint, if you're looking that way, they would presumably want somebody who is relatable to them, who can actually reach a deal that is in some way perhaps either trustworthy or has experience, and that's been mentioned somewhere, working in Brussels, something along those lines. Somebody who has the credibility to deliver a deal in that sense. And I would wonder if somebody like that would also have more of a chance of reaching an equitable deal for Britain as well, if the EU is more willing to work with that person than, say, a Boris Johnson or someone along those lines. And the only question I have, or the one way that one could perhaps frame it, that I wonder if a candidate like that could come out, is if could anyone in Britain make the case that I am the most likely to deliver a deal and make it an electability argument as well and say, if you back me, I will be able to deliver a deal that is best for Britain because of the relationship I have with the European Union, and to the other points, I will be able to therefore deliver a broader coalition of the country in the next election for the Conservatives. I just wonder if there is that kind of...
Because that's a very interesting way of reframing it, which is that traditionally it's seen as, you know, it should be the Brexiteer, but what you're saying is it should be someone who can speak to the EU once we've left. So do you after a few years abroad, who would you think are the potentials to do that?
I think that's, again, like a lot of people, it's very tough to see who that kind of person would be, because we have...
But if it was a forced question...
Come forward.
Let's just say.
Obviously, you could say someone like Kenneth Clark, but I think there's no chance of that happening. But that's the kind of person you've been using.
James Harding.
So the one thing that's really odd that's not in the mix in the papers today, because people have taken her word, is Ruth.
That's what I was going to say.
Katie. I think the Labour perspective is a really good place to start. I was told that I think it was a Saturday early afternoon, when the Labour contest concluded and everyone was watching the Miliband brothers sitting next to each other, Cameron Osborne were on a sofa watching it, and they couldn't read what was going on, and one of them turned to the other and said, Ed's got it. And the reason they worked out that Ed had got it was because he had that look on his face of someone who was rehearsing in his mind the speech that he was going to give. David had the look, face of a man who was relaxed, and you're not relaxed before you give a speech. And as soon as the one said to the other that Ed had got it, the other one jumped in the air, right? We're just overjoyed. And I think the thing you've got to ask yourself is if you're Corbyn and the Corbyn team, who are you not too worried about? Right. So I don't think you are too worried about the Jeremy Hunts and that kind of trend. But I would be worried about Ruth. I'd be worried about Boris for the reasons that Adam mentioned, but I'd be really worried about Ruth for the Robert Halford reason, that you've got someone who, you know, can speak to a culture of conservatism that is about the state of the economy.
Would you be worried about Sajid Javid?
So,
pretty terrible.
Well, my Sajid Javid thing is that I think we witnessed something amazing yesterday, which is someone resigned in defence of something they didn't believe in. That's the amazing thing. And the problem, I think, for a lot of that Tory leadership, Jeremy Hunt's problem, Sajid Javid's problem, is they've catered to the Conservative Party at odds with things that they don't believe in. And if you go back, it's just a big trust issue.
But Ruth Ferguson said she definitely doesn't believe it.
I know
we don't believe anyone anymore, but...
do you believe it?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Yeah. Casey, do you believe it?
I would just say, because I am Tory. I wear the colours. I would love it to be Ruth. As someone who knows nothing about politics and doesn't know any of the nuances, all the different bits that you guys are talking about, she is a woman who stands out as brave, and she did something amazing in Scotland when she won that seat up there. She is like someone that I could see people being really passionate for and about. And if you are like me and you are Tory through and through, she is the person I would want, because I would back her, and I think she's brilliant. And yes, she has ruled herself out, and yes, she has said she wouldn't do it. But hey ho, let's do a petition.
Let's go. Let's just go get on the train now. Yeah. So, Anand, do you want?
Thinking about it from the point of view of the country, I want someone who. Who will let facts get in the way of a good argument.
And I mean that in quite a profound sense, that, I mean, you can't exaggerate how damaging it's been that the Tories have been engaged in a leadership contest since the referendum. I mean, since May was proven to be not right, certainly since the election, there's been this dance. And that dance has led to, you know, whatever your survey showed, 50% of Tory members think no deal would be cool. I mean, it's been so damaging for our country that people have just ignored facts and gone on hope and, you know, positive thinking, whatever else it might be. So it seems to me in the Conservative Party there are several of those people. I think Robert Halford's absolutely brilliant. My problem with Robert Halford for the Conservative Party is thinking back to what Conservative MPs said to me about the 2017 manifesto. I think there's probably him and Theresa May and not that many others in the party who share that sort of, I mean, there is a very profound issue at the moment, isn't it, in that neither of our two big parties are entirely sure who they're for anymore. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, is the Conservative Party intent on holding on to Mansfield, and is Labour intent on holding on to Canterbury? And those, you know, that's one of the reasons why the parties have been very slow to talk about policy, I think, is they're not quite sure who they're after. So it's a unique moment in that sense. But looking at the Tory party, now, obviously there's people like Halford. I think David Livingstone's really good. I think he's one of those people who cares about evidence. And actually, I never thought I'd say this out loud, let alone in public, Gove's been on a journey at DEFRA. And I think he's not been able to ignore facts since he arrived at that department. And his tone has changed. And I think some of the things he said about no deal and what the implications would be imply that he's kind of grown up a little bit and is no longer willing to trade in slogans because he understands that the country needs something more than that. Now, it might be a front, it might be a ruse, I don't know. And I don't think the Tory party, or indeed the Labour party, are spoiled for choice when it comes to putative leaders. But that's the key criterion for me, is someone who's willing to think about evidence rather than just bombast.
Robert, you saw over this in institutional terms often. And what's your perspective on it?
Well, there's an implicit assumption in the discussion that the next leader of the Tory party is going to be the next Prime Minister. And I just wanted to question because some of the names that have been mentioned, like Boris, like Dominic Raab, risk causing a split in the party. Mm-hmm. We know Labour MPs like Dominic Green said they will quit the Tory party if Boris becomes the leader. And the test of becoming Prime Minister is that you must be able to command the confidence of the House of Commons. Suppose that the Tories elect a leader who's challenged over that. What are they going to do? They could table a formal confidence motion that this House has confidence in Her Majesty's government under the new Tory leader. They could have a mini Queen's speech and set out, as it were, their manifesto, in particular, their agenda for the next phase of negotiations, if God help us, we are still playing that Brexit game. Or they could perhaps recognise that they're not going to be able to command confidence in the House of Commons, and they could seek an early election. But we know that they can no longer just go along and see the Queen and say, "Mum, I advise you to dissolve the Parliament." The test now...
This is because of the fixed term...
Because of the fixed term Parliament Act. So there are only two routes to a mid-term dissolution. One, you will all know, is what happened in 2017, and two-thirds of all MPs have to vote for elections. And that could probably happen, quite likely to, because they both, we know, would certainly vote for that. The other would be, it would be difficult to try and engineer no confidence motion and to lose it. But forgive me, Matthew, I was...
No, it's important, because it's important not to assume that, you know, it will simply be a kind of handover, as I think most people do. Yeah.
And the new leader, last point, may be challenged in the way, remember, that Gordon Brown was in 2007, when he took over at midterm, and a lot of people, including a lot of people in the media, said, "But you're not a legitimate Prime Minister, you've not been elected." And although that's fundamentally a misunderstanding of a parliamentary system of government, the new leader may fail that kind of...
And of course, no Conservative has had a mandate, Prime Minister has had a mandate since 2015. Yeah. So, Ollie Lane, you wanted to...
You mentioned near the start about whether it matters. I think that's an important point. We've been talking a bit about who it matters or who should succeed from a Conservative point of view, Conservative Party point of view. It actually matters from the country's point of view. Does it really matter? The Sky News poll the other day listed a lot of the candidates. May polls higher in a lot of those polls. We had a bunch of votes last night. Not one of them gets through. Changing the leader. So I know it will happen. Eventually. Changing the leader doesn't really change very much at all. You have a party where Steve Baker and Dominic Grieve are in the same party. They have neighbouring constituencies, they share almost nothing else. Trying to get some sort of movement on what Brexit looks like is going to be incredibly difficult for whoever it is. And if May's deal gets through, it's only the end of the beginning. There's an awfully long way to go. Someone who possibly, we mentioned a few times, someone who possibly is bright enough, has been on the journey, and has got actually the ability potentially to win in Leavey Labour places, because he was a key person in the Leave campaign, is Gove. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who do you still work for?
Yeah.
Funnily enough,
Dominic Cummings, who we all know. Dominic used to say, when everyone was complaining about the education system, about how rubbish it was, and he used to say, "People seem to think out there that there is a door in the Department for Education, and behind that door are a bunch of ninjas, and they will come out one day and fix everything." And he used to say, "There are no ninjas. There isn't even a door." And that's a bit like this. There is no magic thing that's going to happen around here on Brexit. All suddenly you're going to go, "Well, that's Hilton." It's
no ninjas, no Dumbledore. Yes, you are.
Hi, my name's Yannick. Can I question the question briefly? Everyone's, she said yesterday that she would leave if her deal got through. But there's, it's desperate optimism or whatever, but there's a possibility there could be another referendum, in which case, does she leave? She may stay around.
So in your scenario, she stays basically forever. but we stay in the EU.
Well,
so trade.
At least until the end of the longer extension for for the part of the referendum.
Yeah.
I don't see her staying to legislate for another referendum.
She would leave.
No, I just do not see her as Prime Minister legislating for another referendum. So either she stays and refuses, in which case vote of confidence will come.
But the party can't vote for the no confidence again.
No, parliamentary no confidence.
Not until the 7th, right? Yes.
Do we know that she's definitely going to resign?
No,
only
if
she's
in the deal. Yeah.
She's done a lot of stuff.
But she's going to go eventually.
I hope so.
Yes.
Obviously, we've been thinking about it. Sorry, I'm Tom. Obviously, we've been thinking about it in terms of what deal can a leader get through for Brexit, which is completely understandable. But if we were to just for a moment think long term, this might be a bit of a quaint exercise and naive, but which prospective leader can offer the sort of big radical policy program for the country on climate change, on the economy? Looking at it that way, I think might be quite interesting.
So posing that, who?
I don't know the answer. I was hoping someone in this room might.
Yes.
James. James, I think the answer to that would probably be, as mentioned earlier, probably Matt Hancock, with big radical ideas. But generally, I don't think people vote Conservative for big radical ideas. I think he thinks the same. That's what the word means.
They used to, until they decided.
Yeah, true.
In the 80s, they did.
But I think that Gove will probably be the best candidate in terms of what the Tory party requires, because both Major's, Cameron's government, Times government were kind of, a lot of it was spent trying to balance between the moderate wing and the hardline backbencher Brexiteers. And obviously Brexit's amplified that for May. And I think Gove will be in the best position to do that, because he's had a record of government under Cameron and May, and he's also a Brexiteer, so they'll kind of, he'll be able to keep that.
And you think being a Brexiteer is a precondition in the next Tory
Party? Probably, yeah. considering
what they're like.
Question then? Oh, I was going to ask, sorry for arriving late,
Could you say who you are?
Oh, sorry, my name is William.
Hi, William.
Hi. I don't know if this has been discussed before, but who of the many prospective leadership candidates do we actually think is sort of best equipped to campaign in the general election? Because there's been a lot of talking about who can make it to the final two, but a big part of the reason we're in this mess is because May didn't manage to connect with people who weren't dyed in all Conservative voters. Is that on the party's minds? Shouldn't it be?
And do you have any sense that any of the available people amongst the 300 plus Tories around might just fit the bill?
I can't see her necessarily going for it, but I think Liz Truss, if you could ever imagine her being close. I know, Chris. Sorry.
It's the groaning behind me.
Tory Party conference.
Could someone get Chris Cook's?
Well, can I just say, I think being popular at the Tory Party conference is probably
not necessary.
You want to talk bubbles?
One last thing of the cabinet, or at least of the secretaries of state. Then I guess maybe Michael Gove, but I don't see him being leader for a few reasons.
We need to talk about teachers, man. Teachers have big, big political reach, and they hate Michael Gove.
So, yes, do you want to... Let the audio record that there were two teachers who agreed heartily with that proposition.
So just on the... Yeah. I think we haven't talked about, which Theresa May proved to be awful at, is actually talking to other parties. Mm-hmm. Which if you're in the middle of a conventional trade negotiation, if you have a conventional trade policy, you don't normally go for like a Tory trade policy or a Labour trade policy. The conventions in countries with independent trade policies is you build cross-party consensus before the negotiation on the basis that the other party, the other country can see what's going on. And if you do something that they think your trade policy is going to change in 3 years, they'll just wait if it's unfavourable. Yeah. And they'll continue to pick you off. Do we think we have someone who can build consensus in any of these?
Yes, there's a question down here, yeah?
Oh, no, I just wanted to say, not just teachers, but students too.
Can you say your name so we can get that?
Sasha. I teach students, and they are predominantly in conservative like constituencies, and there's no way they would, the new generation would vote for Michael
Gove. Who are they? Is there anyone that they would vote for? Is there any? Are there any who are at least possible?
Having a conversation with them, no.
There's a but there, though. There's
my,
a but.
My mother is an immigrant actually coming to the UK. She thinks Boris Johnson's hair is really nice. So the conversation that Adam just said, she would vote for him. Like it's a very strange way of thinking. But.
Speaking of...
Can you say who you are, sorry?
Alva.
Hi.
Speaking of people who would appeal to the new generation, I actually completely agree that Penny Mordaunt could be an unlikely candidate for that. Like, as someone on the left, I've found that she's had quite a unique appeal for quite a while, and I say that as someone who voted for Corbyn. She's known as a Brexiteer, and I suppose she hasn't had the sort of airing that more prominent candidates have had, so that could change things, as we saw with the last election, the campaigns can really change the results of things. But she is, I suppose the word is woke. Really good socially liberal views, which remarkably converge with a lot of Corbynites. Quite sort of intersectional in her approach to feminism, really good at recognising black women, disabilities,
LGBT,
she's been LGBTQ yeah. rights, on trans issues, she's been really ahead of the curve. I don't know how a Brexiteer would play out as a passionate Remainer, but thinking of who should be worrying the Labour Party mm-hmm. and who we actually like, Liz Truss, the very mention of her made us both groan. And Penny Mordaunt doesn't make me groan as a Labour voter.
That's what we call a start. Dolly, I think you want to say.
I just want to pose this question because I'm more fascinated to hear your answer to it. There is a remarkable, it was the education teacher's point that made me think of it, but people like Damien Hines had the most incredible ability to not be spoken about at all. And I kind of want to pose that question to you and journalists in the room. What is it about the other members of the cabinet that make them invisible?
Who's Damien Hines?
Well, I have to be the sort of unbelievably impartial referee in this great contest of wills, but...
He's not doing anything.
Well, it's not a person. It's just everyone.
Chris
else
Cook's haiku. Haiku in response.
But no one else is doing it. There's nothing happening. We're trying to James. James. We're trying to make the health service work, and that happens at an official
level. James.
Can I just make one point? I thought Robert's point about the possibility of the Tory party splitting and a Boris Johnson leadership prompting a general election was interesting in two ways. One is, I think you really... Is it Georgina? Was it Georgina? Is that her name? Sorry, forgive me, I should know. But actually, if you ask Tories what do they think are the skills that they're most looking for in a new leader, actually I'm looking for one, who will win the next election. That's what MPs will think, and that's what constituency associations will think. Well, Rob's point, I thought, was interesting, because you could have a winner who splits the party and propels you closer to a general election. And it made me think, if we were honestly having this conversation, and certainly back in the times, if this was today, and we're trying to work out what our leader line is in answer to that question, what's the top leader line, I think our answer to the question would be, who should succeed Theresa May? Someone we vote for. So I think there is a real problem here with the idea of a minority government taken over by a minority faction installing a prime minister who then potentially has, as Matt says, 2+ years in control of all of the levers of state. And at a time when we're deeply uncomfortable about our politics, I think there is there is something really troubling about a succession within the Conservative Party translating into control of leadership of the country.
Mm. Well, can I just come in there? Yeah. I think that anyone who wins will call a very rapid general election, to be honest. There won't be a mistake that Theresa May made in delaying it. It really will be a snap election this time around. Or Gordon Brown. Absolutely. The precedents all say go for it straight away if you're going to go for it. One of the big problems about negotiating Brexit is there's no majority. So the one way, if you're not willing to reach across the aisle and reach some sort of cross-party consensus, is to actually get yourself a majority. And I think your point about, how will the Conservative Party decide this, it will decide it on who they think is capable of winning them a general election, is incredibly important, because I think they will expect the next leader to do that almost straight away. So I think electability is almost more important than unity this time around. And actually, normally, party unity is a very big consideration, but I think electability this time around will be the major consideration.
So you think we'll have a general election by the end of the year?
If May goes, absolutely, yes. I would have thought within 2 or 3 months of whoever takes over, taking over, there will be a general election.
And you want to come back?
Well, firstly, I do think there'll be a general election this year. I just want to come back to Chris's point about working sort of across the aisle. The problem goes both ways, doesn't it? Because I think the person across the aisle isn't very good at working across the aisle either. So. But it does raise a very, very big question, which Brexit poses very starkly. But I think anything from climate change, virtually any big public policy problem now, is not a 5-year problem. That poses all sorts of questions about whether or not our style of government is right for the policy problems that we face in the 21st century. Mm. Because this notion that you're switching, particularly if we're going to remain polarised, and every sign that the two parties will be to the influence of members, is whether the system is fit for purpose for the kind of governance we need. I think the answer is probably no. Mm. And I think actually the Brexit negotiations will be a very, very stark indication of that, because you will have a government negotiating a trade deal with an ideological bent that the opposition hates, and the opposition will be saying, as soon as we come in, we're going to rip it up. And of course, the European Union will be saying that exactly as you said, saying, well, we'll wait then.
Chris, you wanted to come in here.
I was just saying, maybe following on from that, one of the problems that was mentioned earlier, you said, is that Theresa May, from the beginning, there's been this issue that she was somebody who did not vote for Brexit, but had to then negotiate a deal based on something that she didn't believe in. And so I wonder at all if what could come into this is, if, say, her deal is not agreed to, whatever of the alternatives, if there is some kind of conclusion on Monday or later about what kind of alternative could potentially have a majority, shouldn't perhaps the next leader of the Conservative Party come from one of those camps? Because if you don't do it that way, then you're again left with a situation where, I don't know, let's say that it does end up being the simple customs union, for example, and that does end up getting a majority in the House of Commons. Do you then want a Brexiteer who doesn't believe in that actually trying to negotiate that policy on behalf of the country? So I just wonder, would that ever come into the Conservative? And in a way, it should come into their feeling of who is then going to be most successful as leader of the party.
Yes. My name's Dario. I just wondered about this idea of a caretaker person in charge for a while who doesn't actually have great leadership ambitions, who just wants to help usher us through the end of the beginning, because we haven't actually got there yet. We haven't got to a deal that's passed. So you probably need a self-effacing leader who just gets on with trying to bring various bits of Parliament together. And so for that reason, I thought David Livington would be the best candidate, because he actually understands.
And would you feel personally happier with that than the May going precipitously in a full-blown leadership contest?
Yeah, because I just think we just need a period of calm, a calm reflection.
Yes.
I think
you say you are again for the audience.
Mark, I think the question that raises, and coming back to your point about working across the aisle, is that if you look at what trying to pass the withdrawal agreement has done to the Conservative Party, you can only imagine what trying to get through the trade negotiation is going to do to the Conservative Party. So, in a sense, like the idea of David Lidington, it kind of come back to what I was saying earlier, the idea of David Lidington sounds nice, but can he lead the Conservative Party? I mean, he could potentially be a Prime Minister, but can he lead anything that is actually can be then called afterwards the Conservative Party? I mean, it just the idea of anybody wearing this period of calm just doesn't seem to wash.
And all it would mean was an unofficial, an ongoing Conservative leadership contest that was just constant, rather than one that was contained within a set period.
But if one of the problems of Theresa May was that she was a Remainer, my God.
Is the answer, and touching upon a few different points across the room, that the Tories have seen how divisive, how destructive the withdrawal agreement has been, and they know that the next steps are going to be potentially even worse, the future trade agreement, that they will do a Boris Johnson, they will call a general election, let themselves kind of implode? Have a Labour government for 5 years that organises, you know, the trade agreement, and then group together in that time, that 5 years, and go with a Ruth Davison. Go with a Ruth Davison, with a kind of that just right of centre candidate. That is it a fact of they will, but no, egotism will probably take its stance, and yeah, whoever caretaker or whatever.
I think one thing we know about the Conservative Party, it will never let lose its grip on power.
I was just thinking, Johnson, whatever he says, you know, Johnson goes for it against Corbyn. At that point, what are you actually going to do?
I would say, though, the good thing about Boris Johnson, that he doesn't believe in anything.
That's the good thing, is it, Tim?
Well, it's perfectly possible that having won, maybe having won an election, he could pivot completely, because he's not a conformist.
Yes.
And we're assuming...
Well, between
because,
Monday and Wednesday, for
yeah,
example.
Yeah. We're assuming now that Boris is, you know, by conviction, a hardline Brexiteer, etc. But this is just a mantle he's taken on since, you know, the spring of 2016. Yeah. So it's perfectly possible he could pivot back.
His main attraction is his total lack of principle,
though. Well, that has been known to be a successful strategy.
It's what we were hoping for from Trump. Let's have some other names. I mean, it's interesting. We've narrowed it down a bit, but I'm still keen to hear if there are any other. I mean, no one so far has really made a case for Rab. Is he completely out?
He's
toxic.
As a reporter who's been around Whitehall and Westminster a long time, the skeletons are not fully out of the closet.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a really unpleasant man. He's a personally a difficult person to work with.
Okay.
Most of his private office resigned by the time he left. He was only in Dexy for sort of 3 months. Yeah. The majority of his private office quit rather than keep working with him. He's a difficult person to deal with. He has a particular problem with women. Mm-hmm. Like,
I can feel the word allegedly soaring through this conversation.
That's all. I thought of that through FOIs. There's an NDA that's been revolving here that's been much litigated, which has been reported widely. You know,
He's out. Okay. Any other names that we haven't yet mentioned?
About someone like Johnny Mercer.
Okay, Johnny Mercer, a sort of SAS option.
Yeah.
anyone attracted by Who Dares Loses?
he hasn't got the baggage that a lot of the names we've discussed have got. He's ex-army, which apparently is good. Doesn't faze me, but people
in
Cornwall, for example, love that.
So it's very interesting watching this debate unravel, because it's like watching someone with a intraction slowly learn to walk again, which is that the whole debate's been caught in a Boris-centric, you know, circular motion. And slowly people begin to think that there might be something more to this question than how is Boris okay? And we've now reached the point where we've got to Johnny Mercer, which is progress of a sort. Are there any other kind of ideas that aren't just related to the Boris question?
I was going to say Steve Baker could prove influential. I don't think he'll run the leadership, but he seems to be increasingly popular amongst the ERG and have a huge amount of influence over them.
Yes.
And I think that if he kind of gives someone the green tick, they'll win a huge amount of backing from the hardline Brexiteers.
Sorry, yes.
No, right now.
I see that Agatha has reached the end, and I must now draw things to a conclusion. And I just very briefly, in the spirit that James has given to these events, sort of give a kind of a brief editorial summation. And I think that what I've learned from this, and thank you all very much, is that this is all about framing, which is that when we started, we were framing it entirely in terms of how what Emma called the Tory id could be dealt with, and whether that was best to have Boris or Rab or someone of that nature. Dow very interestingly said, let's have a caretaker like Lidington, which was an idea that was around at the weekend. And then we sort of managed to relax a little more and talk about the possibility of having someone who could actually put the fear of God into Labour, hypothetically. And both James and Katie mentioned Ruth. I think that it's interesting that her name has not been mentioned, because I think it's true that politicians often say as a position to take for a while, particularly if they're about to have a baby and they've been through mental health problems, I don't want it ever, never, never. And then things change, crises emerge. And I personally think she is a candidate, though perhaps not this time round. And then, most gratifyingly, it got to who would be good for the country, which is, I suppose, what we should all be asking. And Chris, from a European perspective, mentioned that it should be someone in the mould of Ken Clark. And although clearly it can't be Ken Clark, there's a lesson in that. Christina said, you know, in reality, it has to be someone who has some traction in the party. What about Gove? And Anand also said that, you know, Gove had been on a journey, a much abused word, but perhaps an apt one in this case. And then Georgina and Dolly were talking about the actual skill sets you need, which led to the question of someone who had a freshness of appeal. And Matt Hancock was mentioned. William mentioned Liz Truss, which was very interesting. And Alva followed Dolly in mentioning Penny Mordaunt as a sort of woke Brexiteer, which I think is a wonderful contradiction, a parent oxymoron, but a brilliant note on which to end. And it certainly made me think about where the party is going on what might look like a journey of despair, but could end up somewhere else. But thank you all very much indeed. Remember, it's being recorded. And come to the next one. And don't forget to tell all your friends to join the Tortoise community. It's a very exciting adventure. Thank you all. Good evening.